Let's have a nice cup of TRE in the afternoon with Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. Joining us on the line now is Jenny Wood. She's an unstoppable confidence booster dedicated to helping people make their impossible dreams likely. Jenny is a Google executive, a founder of Own Your Career, a speaker, a writer, a mum and a pilot. Her new book, Wild Courage, shows you how to go after what you want and get it. Welcome to the show, Jenny.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you with us. And what a fabulous subject. I love how you're reclaiming nine what we see as negative traits in the book to being something positive. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, wild courage is basically the concept of pushing past the fear that you feel and taking action anyway. And it's the set of tools to go after what you want and get it. And within it are these nine eyebrow-raising traits that create the bars of an invisible cage that keep you small. And those nine traits are weird, selfish, shameless, nosy, obsessed, manipulative, that's a spicy one, brutal, reckless, and bossy.
Wow, interesting. And are these words and situations that you've kind of come across yourself? Have people kind of called you some of these things in the past?
Well, it's more about the fear, actually. So what wild courage overcomes is the three fears that hold us back from taking action. And those are fear of failure, fear of uncertainty. And most importantly, especially in a work environment, is fear of judgment of others. Like, for example, you know, I have felt in the past, so I was at Google for 18 years. I grew from entry level to executive. I recently left to be a full-time speaker and consultant and, you know, work on this book. But whenever I didn't take action at Google, maybe I didn't raise my hand to say something in a meeting, or I decided not to diplomatically disagree with my manager, or I didn't say, hey, I know I'm not the official leader on this project, but could I be the one to present to the client? When I didn't take action like that, it was because of fear of judgment of others. What if someone thinks that I'm bossy? What if someone thinks that I'm being selfish by asking to do the lion's share of this project? What if someone thinks I'm shameless by sharing a really cool win that my team had and CCing my boss's boss, right? Nobody wants to be seen as, quote unquote, that guy. And so that's why I invite people to reclaim these nine traits, because when used in a sane and savvy way, they can supercharge your success. So I'm sure I have been called these things in the past, right? But I think more than that, it was the fear of maybe being called these things that stopped me from taking bold action in pursuit of my biggest goals.
Yeah. One of the big things that I think we can be fearful of is putting ourselves out there, you know, with social media and things, selling ourselves and saying, this is what I do. I'd be the best person to help you with this or whatever it might be, because we're worried, I think, again, of people thinking, oh, she thinks she's something special, doesn't she? And that kind of attitude, as opposed to just having the confidence to do it. And that's how people get more clients and more money.
Yeah. And there was a study that showed that 75% of people lack confidence at work. And I absolutely saw that to be true. I mean, Google hires the brightest and the best and the most talented and the most experienced people in their fields. And yet at Google, I saw so many people rife with imposter syndrome, despite the fact that they had all this experience and talent and all these strengths. And you're right. It's like we don't want to show up as you know, it's tough to say what holds individuals back. And I think some people don't want to be seen as a certain way. That gets to the fear of being called one of these traits. But sometimes maybe we feel like, oh, well, I don't want to highlight this client testimonial of this really great project I did if you're an entrepreneur, or I don't want to say to all my boss's peers that we increased customer CSAT, you know, by 12% year over year, because it's seen as too boastful, right? But your leaders actually want to know this stuff, because they're getting paid to have, you know, good business outcomes, and they're not mind readers or some wizard behind the curtain with all the answers. And if they've got seven direct reports, then they have seven times as much on their plate as you have on your plate. So if you're a little bit shameless, if you're a little bit selfish in asking for what you want and asking to be aligned to a good project, that actually helps your manager, or sometimes it helps you land the job. For example, totally different than a classic work example, but we were just hiring a nanny, and she also does, you know, some stuff, some house management stuff. chef. And she wrote in her application that she said, I'm an exceptional cook. And that is one of the reasons she stood out among all the other applicants. She had the courage, the wild courage, the confidence to not just say, I enjoy cooking or I'm a foodie. She wrote, I'm an exceptional cook. It's a rare thing to write, but it stood out so much. And I was like, wow, look at her. And then of course she did have the goods to back it up, but it's hard for sometimes for people to make that kind of a bold statement, but it's so powerful in the eyes of a hiring manager or a boss or a leader at a company to hear that from someone under them.
Yeah, definitely. I totally see what you mean. One of the words that you were talking about when you said manipulative, you said, oh, that's a spicy one. Explain how manipulative can be a really positive thing in business.
Yeah, so manipulative is the courage to build lasting relationships through empathy. So whether you're selling a product or an idea or yourself, the ability to win friends and allies and supporters is all about mutual benefit. So figure out what people want and go get it for them, because it's not about redividing the pie. It's about expanding the pie. This is about, you know, building a relationship with your boss's peers. Let's say they have seven, you know, peers. Go find two or three that A, have the big boss's ear, because it's not everybody. Let's be real. Some people got there because they were lucky. Like, some people actually have more influence than you'd even expect them to have based on their title. So you have the intersection of who actually has influence, and then that triangulated with who do you like? Who do you get along with? Who do you have fun with? Go get to know a couple of those people, meet them, let's say two or three of them every 6 months. That to me is manipulative in a smart and strategic way. You are manipulating a situation that is both helpful for the company, helpful for your team, and helpful for your personal advancement into leadership. So that's what I mean. It's healthy manipulation. It's not with the intention to harm anybody.
Yeah. And what about obsessiveness? Mm-hmm. We hear the word obsessed a lot these days, don't we?
Yeah, and that can have a negative connotation, but again, we're reclaiming these traits. So obsessed is the courage to set your own standards, to push, persist, and perform, because none of these traits will serve you well if you don't learn to deliver, not for some company, but to achieve your own ambitions. And, you know, I do a lot of keynote speaking. I have a coach, and we were working through the keynote together, and he's like, Jenny, I read Wild Courage, but I have to say there's one chapter I skipped over, and that was obsessed. It just sounded exhausting. But then the funniest thing happened. Within a couple of days, he's like sending me these keynotes to watch. And he's like, oh, watch Steve Jobs' commencement speech at minute 7. I really like what he does there. I think you can do it too. Or, you know, when you tell this story, Jenny, about meeting your husband by chasing him off the New York City subway, which is how I met him, by chasing a good looking stranger off the New York City subway. I think you should double down on this part of it. Oh, and by the way, you know, when you ask this question of the audience, think about asking it phrased in a slightly different way. And I was like, Mike, I know you, that's my keynote coach. I said, I know you skipped the obsessed chapter, but Mike, what you're doing right now is obsessed. This is exactly it. You're so enthusiastic about having a good product. You're so excited to get every little part of it right. And that to me is an example. And a practical tool that you can use that's totally different is having obsessed communication. So for example, if you're pitching a new customer, or you're writing to your boss's boss, or you're writing to an internal stakeholder, think about a tool I call pull it and bullet. If you write in a bunch of prose and long meandering paragraphs, pull it, pull out 50% of the text and bullet, write in bullets instead of long meandering prose. So pull it and bullet is an obsessed way to communicate succinctly and to get your point across quickly so that more people will say yes to you. And that's what I mean by obsessed.
Yeah, you can see the correlation between obsessed and passionate, can't you? How they can so easily mean the same kind of thing. Please do tell us about how you met your husband, because it's a great sounding story.
Of course. So it's 2011. I'm riding the subway home from work on a, you know, crowded, dirty C train in Manhattan. And about 20 feet away from me stands this really good looking guy. And I want to talk to him, but something holds me back. What if he's a convicted felon? What if he's married? What if 100 people stare at me on this packed train? And underpinning those questions were those three fears I talked about before: fear of failure, fear of uncertainty, fear of judgment of others. But yet I'm still so taken by him. So I make a deal with the universe. I say, if he gets off at my stop, then I'll strike up a conversation with him. And if not, then that's the universe telling me it wasn't meant to be. Well, he gets off at the next stop. And just as the doors are about to close, I feel this wave of wild courage wash over me and practically push me off the subway. And I chase after him. I tap him on the shoulder. I say, excuse me, I'm sorry to bother you. You're wearing gloves. So no kidding. This is what I said. You're wearing gloves, so I can't tell if you're wearing a wedding ring, but in the event that you're not married, you were on my subway and I thought you were cute. Any chance I could give you my business card? And the rest is history. We've now been married 11 years. We've got two kids, and that's what wild courage can do. It can give you your life, your success, your leadership potential if we just take the courageous step to take action.
Oh, I love it. It's a brilliant story. And, you know, with things like that, what's the worst that can happen? You know, he could have turned around and said, oh, that's really sweet. Thank you so much. But yeah, I'm married or whatever. And then you go, oh, no worries. Nice to meet you. And that would have been the end of it.
For me, of those three fears, uncertainty, failure, and judgment of others, the hardest one for me is uncertainty. So it would have been more painful to sit in uncertainty wondering what might have been than to go after him, have him say, no, I'm married or I'm taken or you seem gross, right? And live the rest of my life wondering. And it does actually get to the reckless trait a little bit, which is the courage to take intelligent risks and to err on the side of action, because better to learn from your mistakes than waste time predicting the consequences of every decision. Think fast and fearless. And if you're on the fence, do it. But think about how often we talk ourselves out of moving to that country for the study abroad opportunity or the expat opportunity or going for a promotion or asking to be assigned to that challenging project or asking somebody at a bar for their number, you know, overthinking every possible thing that could happen that's bad because our brains have a negativity bias. And that's a classic social psychological principle that keeps us safe, but it also keeps us small and it keeps us following instead of leading. And it keeps us not realizing our full potential. But when you're reckless, and again, this is healthy reckless, you just go for it. You take the chance, you make the decision, you leap, and then you look, an entire world of possibilities opens up for you. And worst case scenario, you move on, right? And you think, all right, failure is just data. And if you look at the leaders that are most successful in life, don't ignore the discography just to focus on their hit albums. They had plenty of mistakes, plenty of redirections, plenty of course corrections, but they treated that failure as data. And that's what I encourage people to do as well.
Yeah. And just quickly, if I can ask you one more thing about the weirdness, the idea of embracing your weirdness. I love that because so often we grow up and we just want to be the same as everybody else. We want to look the same. We want to be normal. But as we get older, the idea of being different and unique becomes a lot more appealing.
That's exactly right. It evolves over time. And again, it goes back to the caveman days, right? Where being weird, which I call the courage to stand out, you know, you could be a lion's lunch, right? Like you've got to stay within the pack and don't do things differently and stay safe and keep your head down. But then in a corporate environment or in any kind of modern life environment as an adult with 8 billion people who are all trying to make a dent, the only way to guarantee that you'll sink without a trace is to be just like everybody else, to be a lemming, to not do things your way, to not raise your hand and say something that might be a little bit different than what people expect in a meeting. And, you know, be smart about it. There are things called trait traps of these 9 traits, which tell you when you're taking it too far, right? You want to be thoughtfully weird and stand out in the right ways. You don't want to be outlandish or obnoxious. And you want to read the room, of course. But the people who have the courage to stand out and be authentic are the ones who really end up being successful, because within your so-called weirdness, honestly, lie your greatest strengths. So hone every ounce of weird you've got, because that's what people notice. That's what makes people see you as a leader or see you as a thought leader or someone independent or someone who is bringing new ideas to the world as opposed to just, you know, getting along to go along.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think it's a fabulous idea for a book with so many great points in it. It's lovely chatting with you, Jenny Wood. Thank you very much for joining us. And if listeners want to get a copy of Wild Courage, Go After What You Want and Get It, it's available on our website, tre.radio. Jenny, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.